Joining us right now on the line is staff writer for The Ringer, contributor to The Ringer Show NFL podcast, former Grantland writer, Robert Mays. Robert, it's John Murphy and Joe Biscaglia here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
No problem, guys. Good to talk to you.
Really good post from you. I think it was last week, maybe Friday. The teams that have defined the 2019 offseason. First, can we agree, Robert, that the offseason is maybe half over, right? Is that right, you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably half over in a few different senses. I mean, you have free agency coming to a close. I think there are still some decent values out there, but for the most part, the big names are gone. And then we'll have the draft. And at this point, maybe a couple more ridiculous kind of head-turning trades, because it seems like we have one of those every week now.
Ridiculous head-turning, I'm assuming you're referring to, say, for instance, Antonio Brown a couple of weeks ago and Odell Beckham last week, right?
I mean, arguably the two best receivers in the NFL got traded within a few days of each other, so if you want to say the NFL has an off season, or you know, there's ever a downtime for people like us, you would be very, very wrong.
Different circumstances with those two trades, but why do you think that happened for those two?
I mean, I think it's a matter of cultural fit. I feel like that was the case with both guys. Antonio Brown had kind of run out of a runway in Pittsburgh, and clearly they had some trouble kind of coexisting with him and Ben Roethlisberger, and then it feels like the Giants just felt like Odell Beckham was not worth the trouble. So, I mean, you have two guys, again, that are impossibly talented, but for whatever reason, they just felt like they were rubbing the people the wrong way, or there was so much discord in those buildings that it wasn't worth it anymore.
Hey, Robert, I know you keep a close eye on what every team does in free agency, but in terms of what the Bills were able to do, I also know that you're a big Bears guy, and so you know intrinsically what they did last year in free agency. And I was wondering if perhaps maybe you saw maybe a parallel from the way that the Bears kind of did things back in 2018 to how the Bills kind of did things. Maybe one big splash, but just a bunch of logs in the fire, so to speak, which is, I think, what the Bears did too.
I feel like, you know, all of these teams with quarterbacks on a rookie contract understand that you only have so much time where you have a lot of financial flexibility. That's why the Bears did what they did last year. You know, right. The Rams have made those sorts of similar moves, and that's kind of where the Bills are at. And I think the real difference is that the Bills don't have that one huge ticket item. I mean, the Mitch Morse contract is considerable for his position, but you know, Khalil Mack's making $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the Bills were more cautious. I mean, if you look at pretty much every single one of those deals outside of the Morse contract, the Bills can get out of it after this season with very little penalty. So I feel like they did a really good job of kind of splitting the difference of, all right, we have this money. We have a ton of cash also. I mean, they were the team, I think, projected to spend the most by over the cap a couple weeks ago just based on their yearly budget. So you understood they were going to spend some money, but they also didn't really set themselves up to fail in the long term. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Cole Beasley contract is something where I think it's like $3 million in dead money after this season. So to add talent to your roster at several different positions while not putting yourself in a bad spot down the road, that's impressive and difficult to do. And when you consider how much reshaping they had to do along the offensive line, and four starters pretty much. I mean, you need to figure out four different spots, and that's so hard to do without being irresponsible. And I think they've done a really good job of finding guys on cheap deals that would be able to start for them in a pinch and make them functional, which that was never a guarantee when you consider the types of players they were losing and where they were at those spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert, I got to give you credit for acknowledging and recognizing what the Bills have done here, because you've got them as one of the eight teams that have defined the 2019 preseason. And essentially what you're saying is they've done it without a big splash, right? I mean, a good center is their number one move in this offseason so far. People, I don't know if the whole league is acknowledging what they've done, and especially remaking the offensive line.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons I consider them one of those teams is that if you look at Mitch Morse and Cole Beasley, I mean, those are two players that other teams wanted. You know, those are guys that had markets. And for the Bills to come in and say, we're going to pay for these guys. We're going to get some bigger ticket items that other teams had interest in. You know, maybe they're not the most expensive players on the market, but they're definitely guys that had suitors elsewhere. And I think that's what's really nice to see from Buffalo. And I think that's kind of what Brandon Bean alluded to last week when he was getting a little bit annoyed about the Antonio Brown thing. It's like, this is an attractive destination. This is a football crazy place, and we can get people into this building. I think that's why it's a really good sign for them.
Robert, I know you love breaking down offensive line and defensive line stuff, and so I'll just stick there. I mean, when the Bills signed Mitch Morse, I mean, it's a difficult thing for for fans to kind of comprehend that don't sit down and watch the film. So what do you make of Mitch Morse? What exactly are the Bills getting in him, and where do they kind of go from here with him?
When he's healthy, he's solid. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a star. He's not one of the three or four best centers in the league, which he's now being paid like. But that's just how free agency works. If you hit free agency and you're a solid starter, there's a very good chance you're going to reset the market. Think about how many players at different positions did that this year. And I think the biggest thing about a free agent center is just the stability it provides you. I mean, Eric Wood was good for years. I mean, I think you guys watched that. You know what that position can mm-hmm. do when you have an above-average player there. You think about just what a guy like Alex Mack did for Atlanta. And Mitch isn't on that level. But again, just a stabilizing force. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to an offensive line, is really understanding how the players in certain positions affect the guys next to them. And I think that that's a really big thing for them. You saw what happened with Kansas City last year when he was dinged up a little bit. They had trouble. They had a lot of trouble in the middle of that line, especially in the playoffs with guys kind of moving around everything else. So to have a force there that's like, all right, we can rely on this guy, that can be an offense-altering thing.
Well, by the way, Mitch Morse is on our show with us here coming up at the bottom of this hour, about 18 minutes away. We're on the line right now with Robert Mays from The Ringer. He wrote a piece about the eight teams that have defined the NFL offseason so far. One of them, Robert, you have the Green Bay Packers, who made some big signings, and we're not used to saying that. The Packers are usually under the radar when it comes to free agent signings, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's typically what their MO has been under Ted Thompson and previous regimes. They're a team that absolutely cherished their comp draft picks. And when guys would leave in free agency, they would never kind of put those in peril by spending money. And we saw that change this year. I mean, you have Za'Darius Smith going there. You have Preston Smith going there. You have Adrian Amos going there. I mean, those are three guys that, again, were near the top of the market at their individual positions. And those are big, big contracts. And I think that there's a couple different things in play there. One, Green Bay understands that its window is small. I mean, there's only a few more years of Aaron Rodgers left. They understand that they have to get better in a hurry. And I also feel like some teams really started to not vilify free agency in the same way that they might have in years past. But we've seen how free agency can help shape championship teams. The Eagles were extremely aggressive in free agency a couple of years ago. We saw a team like Denver, when they won the Super Bowl, reshape their defense with a couple free agent signings. So there are bargains to be found, or not bargains to be found, but there are useful players to be found. And I think that kind of shifts away from, well, good teams don't spend in free agency, to if you find the right players, it can be helpful, has kind of made teams like Green Bay a little bit less apprehensive about making those kind of moves.
Robert, what in your estimation, what exactly is Dave Gettleman doing?
I really have no idea.
Me neither.
I think that this is one of those things, you know, it's easy to say Dave Gettleman,
right,
because he's the one that's facing the media, and he's kind of in front of the firing squad at this point. But we don't know what kind of strings ownership is pulling. And that's always
Fair.
The most difficult thing to kind of comprehend. And it feels to me as if the Giants' ownership structure and the Maras and everything else, there is such an affinity for Eli Manning and what he's done for that franchise, that they're doing nothing to jeopardize how he feels about them, how they feel about him, any of that stuff. I think that if you had taken a quarterback with the number 2 overall pick last year, they would have seen it as maybe we're ruffling some feathers and rubbing Eli the wrong way by sticking with him now. And I just think that it's misguided. I think that at a certain point, you have to be realistic with yourself. You have to have some self-awareness about your quarterback and your roster and your trajectory. I mean, I tweeted it today. When the Colts knew they could get a quarterback at number 1, they said goodbye to Peyton Manning, mm-hmm. who is a much, much better player than Eli Manning is. At a certain point, I know the relationships are important and everything else, but you have to do what's best for your franchise, and it seems like systematically at this point, they are not doing that.
You know, Robert, I had a conversation with our crew in the control room right in the break right before you came on the air about Gettleman, and I've known Dave Gettleman for 30-some years, and I caution these guys. I think you make a good point, by the way, about who knows what the ownership is directing him to do, but Gettleman's being portrayed as some sort of a goofball right now, like, you know, a crazy uncle. He's not really. And his quote today, we've got a plan. You got to be patient. That'd be hard to swallow if I were a Giants fan, but I wouldn't. I bet he's got a plan, which might not make a whole lot of sense to fans right now, but I bet he's got a plan, something in mind where he's going to wind up with this team, if not right away, but at some point in the next several months. And, by the way, he's probably going to get all of that time from that ownership group, right?
Most likely, yes. But the problem for me is that I can't see what the plan is. Maybe it exists, but it seems like there are a lot of conflicting plans. And when you go, you trade Odell Beckham for picks, and you're trying to kind of reshape your roster, and you trade away a guy like Olivier Vernon. I know they got an offensive lineman back, but still. They're trying to do too many things at once, in my opinion. Because if you're trying to kind of rebuild and restock and reshape your team because you've made some incorrect free agent choices and you really need just more talent, then going out and signing more guys in free agency doesn't seem to make sense to me. Why the Golden Tate contract, for example, you're screwing up the third-round comp pick you were going to get for Landon Collins. It just, there's so many things that seem to be in direct conflict with each other that it seems very hard for me to believe they have a cohesive plan that makes any sense.
I hear you.
When I look at a team like Miami and what the Dolphins are doing, that's a plan. I don't know how it's going to work, but they're going to be very bad at football this year, and they're paying their quarterback $5 million, and they're going to have $120 million in cap space. That is a plan. And I just that's why it's frustrating when teams try to do they try to have everything at once, and that's really, really difficult to pull off.
Robert, Joe and I were talking about this earlier. The reports are now basically today confirmed by Gettleman that he called Buffalo to ask about interest in Odell Beckham. What are we to make of that here? I mean, I believe it, but I don't know what to think of it. What do you think?
I mean, I think that that's the logical team to pick if you want to try to shop him, just because they're the team that was interested in Antonio Brown before that trade fell apart. So if you think, all right, they're in the market for a big-ticket wide receiver, why not give them a ring? I think that makes a lot of sense. I can also understand why Buffalo wouldn't be willing to part with that sort of draft capital. I mean, the Giants essentially said that Jabril Peppers was a huge part of that deal. So I mean, it's a really specific type of offer that the Browns had to give up for Odell Beckham. And they're, you know, without the Peppers part of that deal, if they're asking for two first-round picks, I can understand why Brandon Bean just would hang up the phone. They have a plan. Trading two first-round picks for Odell Beckham doesn't seem to be a part of their timeline.
Gotcha.
Robert, as we kind of shift into the next phase, which is draft prep, you know, just getting clubbed over the head with draft information over the next 6 weeks, one thing I'm interested, going back to the offensive line, because I know you like it a lot, in terms of the how these guys from college transfer into the pros and how there's sort of a steeper learning curve than there once was. And in your mind, I guess the idea of drafting linemen highly in terms of first round top 10, Quentin Nelson notwithstanding, because he was kind of an anomaly in what he was. But in terms of drafting offensive linemen that high, what is your opinion on that based on the college game as opposed to the NFL right now?
I'm okay with drafting offensive linemen high. It's just a matter of which type of offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
I hate offensive line picks that are done on athletic profile and potential. I just feel like the barrier to being good at that position and learning it is so high in this era of a CBA where there is such little practice time,
mm-hmm.
that drafting a guy and saying, oh, look at his feet, all this stuff, like we can make him a player, that's really dangerous at those positions. But if you're looking at a guy, and I haven't done my draft prep yet because I'm in the throes of free agency, but
right.
Everything I've heard from people that I trust, a guy like Jonah Williams, for example, from Alabama, he's a player. He's ready-made. He knows how to play the position. This isn't look at how well he moves in shorts kind of thing. It's look at how he dominates the highest level of competition. Players like that are proven, that don't need a ton of work and are already really polished at those spots, I have no problem taking a guy like that really high. Quentin Nelson is the exact type of player. So I feel like it's not about the position necessarily. It's about the traits you're looking for in the position.
Hey, Robert, the Browns are one of the offseason teams that you said have defined the offseason so far. And you also wrote last Thursday, time to take the Browns seriously now that they have Odell. I guess we all agree with that, but how serious are we talking? Make the playoffs seriously? Win the division seriously? Contend for the Super Bowl? I mean, how much better are the Browns, do you think?
I think they're fantastically better.
Really?
They should be the favorite in that division, in my mm-hmm. opinion. I was just looking at it today and just kind of going back down all the talent they've added this offseason. It's staggering. It's a staggering amount of talent, especially when you consider the last calendar year on top of that. To add in one season, Denzel Ward, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, it's just, and Myles Garrett 2 years ago, just how much that roster has been reshaped. And I absolutely think they have more talent than any team in that division. Their ceiling and how far they can go this year is completely tied into how much better Baker Mayfield gets. And I believe he can be really, really good.
What kind of role does the first-year head coach play in that Cleveland scenario?
I think that it's definitely a wild card, but I also think that you saw what he can do with that roster last year. in almost every scenario, I am vehemently opposed to teams retaining their interim coach. It just is such an emotion-based decision that almost never works out. But when you watch what he did with that team over the second half of the season, and especially with Baker Mayfield, I don't think you could go anywhere else. I think the decision was made for them. Because you guys are doing the same thing up in Buffalo right now. When you have a quarterback that you drafted highly, and he's young, all that matters is shaping a roster around that guy to get the most you possibly can out of him. And I think that's why they went with Freddie Kitchens, and that's why I'm pretty optimistic about it.
And in bringing it back to the Bills, since you naturally transitioned there, I mean, looking up and down their roster, obviously notwithstanding because the draft is on the way, but where do you kind of see them stacking up in the grand scheme of maybe not even just the AFC East, because obviously they're behind the Patriots, but in the whole scope of the AFC and where they kind of figure in there?
I mean, I think they can be a solid team. I think they still have a lot of work to do on the offense, but they've come a long way from where they were last year. Even having guys like Cole Beasley, John Brown. What's the right tackle's name? I can't pronounce it. Ty something?
Nseki.
Nseki. He was really solid in Washington last year as kind of their swing guy, and he could play a little bit because of injuries. He's a really reliable player. Fascinating career, but really reliable. Those are the types of moves. If you're not going to spend big and you're trying to build through the draft, which it seems like they're trying to do, I think it's just about building an infrastructure that's sustainable and that's usable for your quarterback. And I really think they've done a lot of that. I mean, two starters on the offensive line at least. We'll see, you know, if Long wins that job or whatever. But then you go get Brown, you go get Beasley. They could easily add a big-ticket wide receiver in this draft if they wanted to. I think that there are moves still to be made, but I really like the steps they've taken so far to build something around Allen in that offense.
Hey, Robert, thanks for this. It's great to get your take on where the offseason stands at this approximate halfway point. We thank you very much for joining us. Hope we talk again sometime.
My pleasure, guys.